And I would now like to introduce tonight's speaker, Mike A. Thank you so much.
My name is Mike Aguirre. I'm an alcoholic. Just a second. I'm really glad. Congratulations, everybody took time. Congratulations on 54 years. I'm really glad you had that speech written out because it gave me time to go to the bathroom. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to make it through. And then when the secretary came up and did her spiel, I was like, whew, now's the time to go to the bathroom. My sobriety date is January 31st, 1992. In a couple of days, I'll have 32 years sobriety if I make it that far. Yeah. I got sober when I was 26 years old. And I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what you guys were talking about. I had no idea what sobriety was about. So the very first time I had heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, my wife's never heard this story. I was working base police, and we were partying after doing a patrol. And one of the guys that I was drinking with, this is it's a messed up story, but this is what happened. He started talking about, you know, what used to happen in his house when they were drinking. And he said his wife started going to AA. And I said, what's that? He goes, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, so what do they do there? He goes, I don't know. He goes, but they were trying to change my wife. He goes, she would come home from meetings and I would hold her down and pour booze. That's how much control was going on and how much he was losing control of his relationships and everything else in his life, right? That was the very first time I heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no idea what was going on here. My first meeting was sometime during the month of January of 1992. I was dating a lady at the time. She was a drug and alcohol abuse counselor. She had 6 years of sobriety. And I met her in a bar. And she asked me to dance. And I remembered her name. Now, that's an amazing event that just took place there. Okay? I remembered her name. That's the amazing part. The bar and everything else, I mean, I met people all the time in bars. I love bars. I loved bars. So when I first joined the Navy, the first time I got high, I was 13 years old. It was in a little town called White City, Oregon. I was riding my bicycle. One of my friends said, hey, I got a joint. Do you want to get high? And I was like, I don't know what that is. And he said, well, we smoke it. I was like, okay. So we smoked it and I got high. And I started chasing marijuana every day. 13 years old, that was 1978, 79, 3 to 5 times a day, every day. I would smoke pot all day long. I would go to school, we'd smoke before we go to school. We get on the bus would take us to school, we get off the bus, we'd go out off the school grounds, we'd smoke pot, then we go into school and we'd try and learn some stuff, and then lunchtime we'd go back out and smoke some pot again, and then from there we'd go back to school, and then after school we'd get back on the bus, and we'd go to the bus stop, we'd get off the bus stop, we'd smoke pot, and then I'd go home and raid the refrigerator, right? And that was every day. That wasn't my life. That was from 13, right? 13 until 18. Right, 18, I went to join the Navy. They said, you can't smoke pot in the Navy, but you can drink as long as you're on base. And so I went through boot camp. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. 2 months, graduated from boot camp. Went to my very first bar on the base, and I got to drink on the base. And I walked up to the counter, and I looked at the sign, and it said Michelob was $1.05, and Miller was 85 cents. I said, I'll take a Miller. I didn't care about taste. I just cared about effect. I never drank for taste. I always drank to get drunk, right? And so it wasn't the first time I got drunk. I got drunk many times, right? But I always drank into a blackout, And I always drank. I love drinking in bars. I've just the atmosphere, the, you know, it was like going into a fantasy, you know. It was like I could go in here and be someone different. And when things got really weird at the bar because people started finding out who I was, I could always go to another bar and start over, right? Create a new group of friends. And I love drinking in bars. I would drink into blackouts. I blacked out all over the world. The fact that I'm standing here is an amazing event. But I love drinking. I love drinking in bars, and I love blacking out. I didn't like blacking out. I hated blacking out. I wake up the next day, and people tell me what I did. I was like, oh, shit. Anyways, I met Cindy in a bar, and she took me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I met Cindy in November of 1991, and I didn't see her again until January of 1992, but I remembered her name. In November 1991, I started, I don't need to go too deep into my drunkalog. I mean, it was just chaos everywhere. All over the world, there was chaos. But, you know, I was a hard worker, right? All of my work that I would make up for all my dereliction, you know, in the Navy by doing hard work, extra hard work. And but as soon as I hit port, it was like off and running. I was the division dirtbag. I'd show up, my uniform would be wrinkled, and you know, I'd be a mess. And it's like, let's go to work. It's like, okay. And you know, it's like I never got put on report or captain's mess or anything like that. But it was like my evaluation sucked. You know, the fact that I was making rank was a big deal because I shouldn't be. And but I could think, and I could process, and I could do stuff, and I was a hard worker. So, you know, they took care of a lot of the stuff in-house in the division. And in November of 1991, I went to this bar, and Yule Plank Inn down in Imperial Beach. And I was drinking at the Plank, and it's hot in here, excuse my language. I just swore into the microphone. It was a whisper. I was drinking in the bar at the old Plank Inn. I blacked out. I came to. I was chasing a guy around the parking lot with a knife. It was about this long. I used to carry it on my side because I wanted to be a badass. I was a make-believe badass. I wasn't a badass, but I was a make-believe badass. I wore a leather vest. I talked about riding Harleys, but I didn't ride a Harley. And all my money was going on booze. I mean, I didn't have money to afford. I couldn't afford that. It's like, that's stupid, spending your money on that much shit. It's like, why would I spend $15,000 on a motorcycle? That's crazy. I could buy one down the street for $500 and I'll ride it. You know, it wasn't a Harley, but I didn't care. It's like, I looked the part. I was a fake. Any other fakers in the room? Come on. So I went to my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous after Cindy and let me finish that. I was chasing a guy around the parking lot with a knife. I didn't get arrested. They all my friends grabbed me, pulled me out of the bar, got me out of there before the police showed up. And I went back to the bar the next night, and the bouncer said, you can't come in here. I said, I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking. I swear to God, I'm not drinking. And I meant that. I was never drinking again. Right after they told me what happened, I was never going to take another drop of alcohol. And 3 days later, I had a beer in my hand. Shortly after that, New Year's Eve that year, I ended up sleeping with someone else's wife. In a blackout. And what had happened was drugs and alcohol had taken every moral teaching that my parents, I have great parents. I mean, my parents loved me. They cared for me. I don't have the horror story that a lot of people have. I mean, there was discipline, right? And my mom was a rager, but I mean, there was discipline, and there my mom was okay. So by the time my mom was 22 years old, she had five kids. Five of us running around the house, no TV, you know, and so it was like, I mean, our house was like pure on insanity. I mean, we were just like all on go all the time. And this is before Ritalin came out to knock them all down, right? It's like we were on go full speed all the time. And when I started smoking pot, it was actually a good thing because it kind of like calmed me down. I forgot where I was going with that. This is crazy. I told Eric that I was just going to come up here and have fun, you know? And so my mom and my parents, great parents, five kids. So I slept with someone else's wife. All right, back on track. So my parents and society have given me great moral teaching, right? It's like I knew right from wrong. There's no one in this room that doesn't know right from wrong. We've all been trained about what is right and what is wrong. I mean, just ask yourself how you feel when someone does something wrong to you. You know that's not right. Right? And I knew that. Right? And so when that happened, I was just like, man, I really got to do something about my drinking. Because I don't want to live this life. Right? But I didn't do anything about my drinking. Right? And when I started dating Cindy, we were dating for about 2 weeks, and she said, you know, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to go to meetings. Do you want to go? I said, okay, I'll go. And so my first meeting was a bonfire meeting down at Shelter Island. I'd gone there. I didn't relate to anything that anyone said. The only thing I related to was when they read more about alcoholism. Taking a trip, not taking a trip. Swearing off forever with and without a solemn oath. Taking more physical exercise. Reading inspirational books. I didn't read any inspirational books, but I did take more physical exercise, right? Those were the only things I related to in my very first meeting. They read How It Works. I know they did, right? People talked about something. I don't remember what it was, right? And then right at the end of the meeting, this guy stood up. He was wearing full leather, right? And he goes, my name's Don. I'm sober 5 years. Any of you newcomers that are looking for a sponsor, we got some whips and chains to put your ass in gear, right? And I was like, I like that guy, right? And Don's probably got 37 years, 38 years, if he's still around. I haven't seen him for a long time. But I used to see Don a lot at meetings. And I know, you know, it was great to see him, you know. The second meeting I ever went to was at the Alpine meeting up in Monday night up in Alpine. And I met one of the guys that had a lasting impact on my life. His name was Terry Peterson. He died in a motorcycle wreck. And Terry asked me, he said, Mike, Mike, if you're not done drinking, there's a bar down the street. Go get done. Right? And I never saw anything about sponsorship in the big book. I never saw, people talked about sponsorship. People talked about doing a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. But they gave me this book, and I started reading this book, and I didn't understand what I was reading. And Terry had asked me if I had gotten a sponsor yet, and I said, no, I don't know what that is. And then I talked to Cindy about that. Well, what's this sponsor thing? She said, well, it's someone that can, you know, guide you through the steps. I was like, I don't understand all this. This seems like a whole bunch of, you know, brainwashing going on here. I don't understand this. And my brain needed to be washed, that's for sure. But I didn't understand Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'd go to meetings and I would, you know, hang out and listen to what people had to say. But I didn't grasp this whole recovery thing. I didn't understand what recovery was about. I thought it was abstinence. And you got abstinence by going to meetings. And people would talk about the steps, but I don't, no, not going to work. And then I heard the word God, and that kind of scared me. And I had avoided God most of my life. I knew nothing about God. It was a topic that wasn't discussed in our house. My dad was raised strict Catholic. My mom was raised strict Protestant. They decided to raise us with no religion at all. And so, You know, I knew nothing really about God. I didn't know nothing about the Bible. I didn't know anything about anything when I got here. I was so insecure in who I was and what I, as a man, I was so insecure as what I was supposed to be doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no idea where I fit. I had played the chameleon for so long, even coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no idea where I fit in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found this little Alano club in Coronado, and I just started going to meetings every day. I was still working base police. I worked the midnight shift down at Imperial Beach at the Outlying Landing Field. And during the days, I would go to meetings at the noon meeting in Alano club in Coronado. And I met this guy by the name of Mike, and I asked Mike to sponsor me, and Mike was the kindest, gentlest man I ever met in my life, and he was too kind. I couldn't relate to him, and I he took me to his house, he introduced me to his wife, he introduced me to his kids, and we started reading the book, and I went there 3 times, and that was it. I just ghosted him, you know? And I never said, I'm not going to do this, I can't do this. I never said, I don't want you to sponsor me. I never said, I don't want none of that, right? Which was totally, like, bullshit is what it was, right? What I should have done was manned up and said, sorry, this isn't working for me, right? But I didn't. And I didn't get a sponsor for the next 5 years, actually 4.5 years, right? So 4.5 years, I'm coming to meetings. I'm in AA. I'm not in AA. I'm on the outskirts of AA, coming to meetings, talking to meetings, think I know what I'm talking about, and I don't know what I'm talking about. I know nothing about the steps. I know nothing about recovery. I know about not drinking one day at a time, right? And not drinking one day at a time will get you in a really bad place, right? I used to be, like, insane. One day at a time, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink, right? And I would have these, not out of, I would, the anger that was inside me was insane. My wife and I ended up marrying Cindy when I was 90 days sober. So, if you ever want to be in a relationship with a drug and alcohol abuse counselor that's, like, got 6 years sober, you don't need to get a sponsor because they're going to tell you everything you need to do, right? I like to say, I mean, there's counselors do a lot of great work for a lot of people, okay? Most of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous today have gone through some kind of counseling, some kind of therapy, and have had counselors going through treatment. I didn't have any of that. I didn't go through a treatment facility, right? I had a very manipulative wife, and that's what counselors are. They're manipulators. They train you to think and believe a certain way, right? A different way than what you've been trained to believe and think. And that's what their job is. Their job is to help you find a different way to look at life. And that's what she was trying to do. She was trying to get me to look at life her way. And I couldn't grasp life her way. The other reason I couldn't grasp her life is she was like 15 years older than I was. And it was just a messed up situation, you know? And I always ask this question, who do you think was sicker? The guy that's 90 days sober? Or the person that's 6 years in recovery, drug and alcohol abuse counselor, marrying a newcomer. Be careful, there's a lot of people out there that are sick, especially newcomers, right? And I need to share that, right? Because it happened to me. My experience has been, I came to AA, right? I mean, granted, I had this lady with me before I came to AA, right? But I came to AA, and that was all I knew as far as Alcoholics Anonymous is what she was teaching me because I was unwilling to look anywhere else, right? So for the newcomers in the room, right, stay away from the drug and alcohol abuse counselors that are 6 years sober that are single. Okay, that's me having fun. I mean, that's just me having fun. I mean, great. You know, I mean, so, you know, that's part of my story, though. It's like I came to AA and I knew nothing about recovery, and I've got everything I need in this, right? So, anyways, at 4.5 years, I could no longer live the lifestyle I was living. I was ready to commit suicide. I had an affair, and I couldn't live with the guilt. I went and told her about that, and it devastated her, and it devastated the relationship. And I was like on the curb immediately, right? And so I called this guy that I had been talking to. Every Sunday morning I would call him, and we were just talking, right? And I asked him if he would take me through the steps and help me change my life. And that man's name was Al Thorstenson. And Al's, he's only got a couple more years sober than I do, right? He just celebrated 36 years. He's 92 years old. He's had a lot of life experiences that he was able to pass on to me and help me and guide me through my sobriety. But he was an educator of children. He taught junior high school children, right? Which is perfect. I mean, it was absolutely perfect for me because I had the mind of a junior high school kid, right? It was like I had never done any growing up at all, right? And so he was able to talk to me and explain this book to me and able to guide me through the process of recovery, right? And the process of recovery is taking the steps, and the steps are outlined in this book, right? And he was able to explain this book to me in terms that I could understand, right? Because I was stupid, right? I couldn't read this book and comprehend what I was reading, right? I would read this book, and I would get upset because I couldn't comprehend what it was saying, and I would throw it across the room. Fuck this book, right? But when I sat down with Al and we started going through this, he started teaching me what this book was saying. Right, and this book was designed, right, to take someone that had an education, not me, because I didn't have one, because I wasted mine, right? This book was designed to take someone that has an education and walk them through the process of staying sober without having someone to be there. That's why this book was written. This book was written because the word of mouth message was getting watered down. And it was getting changed, and it was getting altered through next person, next person, next person, right? It's like, well, what are we doing? Well, this is what this guy said, right? But let me throw my ego in there and boost it up a little bit, or tear it down a little bit, or water it down. You know, the message was getting changed. That's why this book was written. This book was written to carry a message of recovery to the person that's 500 miles away, that they could put it in the mail and mail it to them, and they could learn how to stay sober by using this book. And that's what it was designed for, right? But I was uneducated. I couldn't comprehend what I was reading. I didn't understand what it was saying. And my sponsor took me through this process of teaching me what this book has to say and why it's in there. First thing my sponsor said was, I want you to start writing a letter to God every day. I said, I don't believe in God. He said, I didn't ask if you believe in God. He goes, I want you to start writing a letter to God every day. I said, I don't know how to do that. And he goes, it's simple. He goes, I'll explain it to you. Dear God, my sponsor wants me to write a letter to you every day. I don't think this is going to work, but I'm going to do it anyways. Here's your letter. He goes, start with that. He goes, that's how you start. He goes, you got to start somewhere, and what you have right now isn't working for you. So I started writing a letter to God every day. And I did that for like 24 years. Right? I get up every morning. I don't write letters anymore, right? I do morning prayer and meditation, right? The alarm goes off at 5 a.m. I don't get in the shower until 6:15. From 5 a.m. till 6:15, I'm reading this book. I'm investigating what's in this book. I'm looking up what's in this book, and I'm thinking about how I can help the next alcoholic, and I'm praying to whatever is out there, right? I still don't know what it is. I went through this huge journey of trying, how do I define God, right? And it's like, it took me through astronomy. It took me through research in history on Christianity, on Buddhism, on Hinduism. I've read the Quran. I've read the Bible. I've read it all, right? Me personally, I just think they're fireside stories that were getting convoluted and passed down from word of mouth that finally got written down sometime a long time ago. And that's just my personal belief. I believe that in all the books that I've read, not just one or two, all of them. It's like the ancient history of these ancient religions all started word of mouth, right? And so who's to say whether it's true or not? I don't know. But here's what I do know, right? It's through my seeking and searching, right? I've been able to stay sober. I've been able to have an altered attitude like our friend over here spoke about with 54 years. My life has changed as a result of seeking and searching. What is this thing we call God, right? What is this thing we call God? Page 46 in the Big Book says it's impossible for anybody to fully define or comprehend this power which we call God. It is impossible for anyone to fully comprehend this thing that we call God. And I've got it highlighted in here because I was taking a guy through the steps and he was trying to talk to me about God and what God is to him. And I said, I don't care what God is to you, right? What I care about is, are you seeking God, right? Or are you seeking a higher power? Right, because that's where the change takes place. That's where the change took place with me. And I only share my experience, strength, and hope with my new guys, right? I don't know how to get you from point A to point B. I know how I got from point A to point B. And how I got from point A to point B was by going through this book and reading these steps, right? Page 46. Even though, let's see, yet we agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experience, let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we are labeled to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commence to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. Step two is on page 47, is the only step that is not identified in this book. Right, they have a whole chapter designed for step two, but there's only one spot on page 47, right, where it outlines exactly what step two is. It said, we need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. And it was through that process of my sponsor asking me to write this letter every day that I came to believe in a presence, a source, a something that has helped alter and change my life. My goal coming up here tonight was to talk to the new Josh Walkum. I've seen him at a couple of meetings I go to, and I'm really glad you're here. My goal is to talk to the newcomer tonight about establishing a relationship with whatever God is in your life or you seek, whatever that is, right? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a God of religion. It could be just these stars. I don't care, right? Seek something. Look for it. Find it, right? Because that's, for me, that is what has changed my life, is me seeking what is this thing we call God. And it's when I was able to get past that, that my sponsor took me through the rest of the steps. In the inventory process, I thought it was this big, huge boogeyman. This, you know, I avoided the fourth step at all costs for many years. It took me 5 years and 20 minutes to do my first fourth step. 20 minutes. I mean, think about that, right? In the Big Book, it goes through and it talks about, I'm going to go to it, page 64. It says, in dealing with the resentments, we set them on paper. We list people, institutions, and principles with whom we were angry. I thought a resentment was this like big lofty word I couldn't understand, right? And my sponsor said, who are you pissed off at? Write it down. He goes, it's that simple. Who are you pissed at? Write it down. Write down, make a list of who you're pissed off at. I said, oh, I can do that. That's easy. My chief, my this, my that, blah, 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 my ex-wife, right? I mean, I can make a list of people. My ex-wife's attorney, I'm really pissed at him, right? It's like, I can make a list of people I'm pissed off at, right? We asked ourselves why we're angry. That's column two. That's this column that's in here. Why am I angry? I'm angry because I'm in fear that they're taking shit from me, right? The way they treated me. The way I treated myself. In most cases, we found it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, ambitions, personal relationships, including sex. We were hurt or threatened, so we were sore and burned up. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relations, which had been interfered with? Simple as that. I mean, the fourth step is a simple process, and we've turned it into this deep psychological review of your childhood all the way up to the time you quit drinking, and you need to talk about how your mom beat you and how things have gone wrong in your life and why you behave the way you do and what your fears are. And your fears are designed by anxiety, and I have to take pills for my anxiety, and I have to take pills for my depression, and I have to do this and I have to do that. It's not a deep psychological issue. But the inventory is a very simple process, right? Who are you pissed off at? Why are you angry at them, right? And what was your part? And then it says, list your fears. Make a list of your fears. I made a list of my fears. Part of it was in my resentment list, right? And then I said, do a sex inventory. What? I don't talk about sex with nobody. The sex inventory was simple. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. My conduct. How did I treat other people in my sexual relationships? When I had that affair, was that a good conduct? No, right? I reviewed my conduct in the years past. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom did I hurt? Right? That's the inventory process. I take all this information and sit down with my sponsor and we share it. I talk to him about it. He goes, not a pretty picture, is it? I said, no. He goes, you know, when you look back and you go to the beginning of the inventory, Bill mentions, you know, that a business that goes broke or about stock in trade. He goes, you're a stock in trade. Anybody want to buy what you're shoveling out? Think about that, right? To the guy that's new in the room, right, who's been sober for a couple of years, is still carrying the thug wannabe badass attitude like I was for a long time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. What are you putting out? What are you representing? What are you saying, right? What are you selling? Are you selling Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you selling peace and love? Are you selling helping other people? Are you selling it's all about me and selfishness and self-centeredness? Right? The inventory process is important. Right? I don't want to sell that today. I'm fully capable of it. Still. I still have bad days. I still get angry. I still react when I haven't had enough sleep, like a child with a temper tantrum, you know, 2 years old. Time for a nap. No, I'm not taking one, right? Right? I am still, I mean, I'm 32 years old. I'm still capable of behaving that way. I just did it last year. I still regret every minute of it. Every moment of it. I behave like an animal, right? And I have yet to let go of that. I pray every day that I find peace with that situation. The rest of the steps are all about me and my character defects. And my character defects are only handled and taken care of by me seeking God. I cleaned up my past. I made amends to my ex-wife. I flew back to Massachusetts. I had the divorce paperwork. I was on 30 days leave. And when I was there, I took her to dinner. I made an appointment. She had another man in her life. I drove all the way across the country. And I had coordinates exactly to their house. And I showed up at their house, and I drove all the way there, and I forgot her phone number. That's fucking crazy, right? But he was standing outside. He saw the California place. He said, "Are you Mike?" I go, "Yeah, I am." He goes, "I'm Chuck. Nice to meet you." He goes, "I've heard a lot about you." I go, "I don't know about that. I don't know how good that is, right?" But he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he welcomed me into his home. And I took my ex-wife to dinner, and I made amends to her. And when I made amends to her, I had done the work in 6 and 7 where I looked at what my character defects were in that relationship. And I made amends to her. And I said, "I am responsible for this, this, and this, and I owe you an amends." And she said, "Well, what about this and this and this and this," right? And clearly she hadn't done any work with her sponsor, right? But I said, "What do you need? What do you need for me to make this right?" And she said, "Are you serious?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "I want you to rewrite the divorce paperwork." I said, "We got it right here." I go, "All we got to do is sign it." She goes, I want to change some things." I said, "Okay, whatever you want." I go, "Whatever you want." So that weekend, we went through every line on that divorce decree, and we rewrote it to her terms, whatever she wanted, because I was making an amends, right? I got to clean up that shit that I did in her life. It didn't matter what she did in mine. I was there cleaning up my side of the street, right? I'm going to tell you, there's some freedom that came with that, right? It cost me a lot of money, right? It cost me a lot of my pride, right? But when that lady walked into, my wife used to fly out with my daughter to bring her out for visitations. And when she flew from Massachusetts to San Diego, when she got off the plane in the airport, I'd be standing there in the airport terminal, right? And the first thing she did when she looked at me was she would look at the ground. I could look her in the eye. I had cleaned up my side of the street. She had no control over me, right? And that's what happens when we work these steps. We get a personal freedom that is nobody can buy. You can't buy that, right? It's something that comes from within. And I got to, you know, clean up my side of the street. And because of that, today I'm a free man. I mean, I have to make amends all the time because I am a human being. I'm in a relationship. I met this beautiful lady in 1999, right? We met on AA campus. I'm going to share real quick, right? Because I know we got to be out of here by 9, right? In 1999, I met this lady. I had been out of relationships for 2 years. Right? I had worked the steps with my sponsor. I was going to meetings, and I met her in a conference in Laughlin. She was out of relationships 2 years. It wasn't boy meets girl on AA campus, right? Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Let's do this, right? It was like that wasn't what was going on, right? She was practicing a spiritual program, living a spiritual life. I was practicing a spiritual program, living a spiritual life. We met on AA campus, right? And we have developed a relationship for the last almost 25 years, right? We got married after we were together for 7 years, right? We want to make sure it's going to work, right? There's a long story behind that. I got to wrap this up, right? Right. Yeah. So my last deployment, I did 9 years in the Navy. I did 20 years in the Navy. My first 9 years I did drunk. I went all over the world. I drank in all the bars. I did all everything all over the world, right? My name's on ceilings in bars in Singapore. I mean, it's crazy, right? So I was a drunken derelict all over the world, right? And then my last 11 years I did sober in the Navy. And I got to go all over the world and go to AA everywhere. I've been to AA in Hong Kong, Singapore, Thailand, right? I've been to AA in Bahrain. I've been to AA in Australia. I've been everywhere that you can think of. Alcoholics Anonymous is everywhere, right? And I got to meet people and have relationships with people. And, you know, a couple of years ago, there was this new girl in Lori's life, and she was in the Navy, and she was going to Bahrain. And I said, "Hey, I got this guy's name is Philip, right? When you get to Bahrain, if he's still sober and if he's still alive, here's his number." And his number still worked, and he was still sober, and he was still there, right? And I got to transfer that information to other people. I've got to help people stay sober, and I got to be sober myself, right? I got to see the world in recovery, right? And I got to see the world. Because what I saw when I was drinking was the inside of a bar, right? But my last deployment, some old guy with 54 years said, you know, take the big book with you, right? And circle how many times it says we and how many times it says I. And so I took the big book with me, right? I got, this is my pocket big book. I took it with me. I went to meetings on the ship. We had, man, it was a, I was in AA and I still am, right? There was this group of guys that was on that last boat that I was on, and they were young and they were scared, right? And I got to teach them, and I got to walk them through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to be a part of their lives, right? And I really hope I got to make a lasting impression on them, whether they stayed sober or not, right? But I got to carry these books with me, right? And I read this book, and I read this book, right? And I would, every time I would see the word we, I would circle it. And at the bottom of the page, I would write how many was on that page, right? And at the end of the chapter, I would write how many's in that chapter, right? And so in the big book, to the best of my knowledge, it says we 1,070 times. 1,070 times it says we. It doesn't say I at all. It says we, right? Except for in Bill's story. He talks about I, right? And then the 12 and 12, right? It says we 1,317 times, right? So these are the two books. I cherish these books, right? There are so many memories attached to these two books, right? For me being of service to other people, right? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I have faith in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have absolute 100% faith that Alcoholics Anonymous will change your life if you're willing to do the work, right? But it's not gonna, nothing's gonna happen if you're just sitting on your ass doing nothing, right? Nothing's gonna change. You may not drink, right? But you're gonna be miserable. And who wants to be miserable, right? I want to be happy, joyous, and free like my friend talked about. I love you guys.
Standing ovation. That was incredible, Mike. Time flew by. That was a lot of fun. Let's everyone give him another round of applause. We'd also like to thank the Women's Auxiliary and the gentleman who cooked for us tonight. Thank you, guys. We can now circle up for the prayer of Mike's choice.